Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
The Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says more than 70 countries are trying to make a deal with the United States, trying to talk to them, as the stock market today did not have the crash that some people had predicted it would have. Thank God. That's the good news. And NASDAQ actually even finished in the green today. And the S&P was down, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down too. I'm not saying it's rosy. It's not rosy, but it's not, you know, it's not Black Monday. It's not 1987 all over again. The president putting out on True Social, don't be weak, don't be stupid, don't be a panickin, a new party based on weak and stupid people. Be strong, courageous, and patient, and greatness will be the result. The United States has a chance to do something that should have been done decades ago, in all caps. Don't be weak, don't be stupid, don't be a panickin. Be strong, courageous, and patient, and greatness will be the result. Now, I'll share this clip with you if I could. This is from earlier today, the Treasury Secretary. I played this in the 5 o'clock hour, but it's worth playing again here in our fourth and final hour, too. Scott Bessent saying there's 70 countries, trying to come to the U.S., trying to make a deal, trying to make this all work. Take a listen.
Larry, I can tell you that there are 50, 60, maybe almost 70 countries now who have approached us. So it's going to be a busy April, May, maybe into June. And Japan is a very important military ally. They're a very important economic ally. And the U.S. has a lot of history with them. So I would expect that Japan's going to get priority, just because they came forward very quickly. But it's going to be very busy. And if President Trump, again, gave himself maximum negotiating leverage, and just when he achieved the maximum leverage, he's willing to start talking.
Today, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House with the president, and he said that Israel is going to have 0% tariffs. Now, the president didn't agree to anything sitting there today. And I think that that's, as Phil Kirpin said earlier in the show today, because you got to investigate all this stuff. And there's more than just tariffs at issues here. There's trade barriers and other things. But Netanyahu wants Israel to be a model for eliminating trade barriers. This is what he said today at the White House. Take a listen.
I can tell you that I said to the president a very simple thing. We will eliminate the trade deficit with the United States. We intend to do it very quickly. We think it's the right thing to do. And we're going to also eliminate trade barriers, a variety of trade barriers that have been put up unnecessarily. And I think Israel can serve as a model for many countries who ought to do the same. I recognize the position of the United States. It says, you know, we're allowing other countries to put tariffs on us, but we don't put tariffs on them. And, you know, I'm a free trade champion, and free trade has to be fair trade. And I think that's basically the position that you have put forward, Mr. President. We are going to eliminate the tariffs, and rapidly.
Okay. Now, the question is, and some people are wondering, are we moving the goalposts here? Because Peter Navarro said today, so Vietnam said they want zero tariffs. All right, that's what they want. A lot of companies moved to Vietnam. When the president imposed 25% tariffs on China in his first term, a lot of companies picked up their manufacturing operations and moved to Vietnam. And I know that we would have liked them to come here, but they went to Vietnam. They did so in response to the fact that China couldn't be trusted, and Vietnam has been a trading partner for us. They've now turned around since the tariffs were announced last week and said 0% tariffs. Peter Navarro says that's not good enough. This is what he said this morning on CNBC on Squawk Box, right before the market opened earlier today. Cut number one, part one.
Let's not get buried down in those weeds now. You asked me a serious question. Was the president willing to negotiate? What we have here is a national emergency based on massive chronic trade deficit caused by systematically higher tariffs and non-tariff barriers. So when you ask if we're willing to negotiate, the president will always listen. But let's understand what the problem is. When you have a country like Vietnam, let's take Vietnam. When they come to us and say, we'll go to zero tariffs, that means nothing to us because it's the non-tariff cheating that matters. Let's do Vietnam, Joe. They sell us $15 for every $1 we sell them. About $5 of that 15 is China transshipping to Vietnam to evade their tariffs. What does Vietnam do? They dump into our markets, killing our shrimpers, our people who make metal brackets, kitchen cabinets, agricultural products. They engage in intellectual property theft. They have the biggest number of cases aside from China at the Department of Commerce on the dumping. So the point is, anybody who wants to come to talk to us about lowering your non-tariff barriers. Vietnam has a 10% VAT. Europe has a 19% VAT. We can't compete against that. We have tried at the World Trade Organization since the 1970s to get VAT tax relief, and they've told us no every single time. We've won case after case at the World Trade Organization on things like our agricultural products, pork, beef, and corn, and they just blow us off.
Okay, the VAT tax issue. And this is where you go back to President Trump saying that the European Union was put together just to screw the United States of America. And that the VAT tax issue is a real problem because that's how Europe basically uses its money. And this is it's complicated, too, because it's not just Europe that uses it. A lot of other countries use it as well. Value-added tax. A value-added tax is levied on the value added at every step of a good's production, with the final consumer ultimately bearing the cost. So you and I pay the cost. Here's a fictitious car scenario from the Wall Street Journal. A steelmaker collects VAT when it sells steel to a car maker and hands the VAT over to the government. The car maker collects VAT again when it sells the car to a dealer, but this time gets a tax credit or retains a share of what it collects to make up for what it paid the steelmaker. This is replicated along the chain to the final buyer, who pays ultimately the full value-added tax. And the system incentivizes businesses to levy and remit the tax to claim their tax credits, making it self-policing and harder to evade than sales taxes. And it's charged and reclaimed at every point of the production. And it's that is also easy to refund and export, so it's trade neutral, but they hate the VAT tax. Peter Navarro hates it. Trump hates it. They absolutely hate it. And they want to see it, get rid of it. But Europe relies heavily on the VAT tax. That's they're like the entire European Union is financed on that. That's why when you hear them say Europe wants to come to the table, if the Trump administration is also saying you got to get away from the VAT tax because we're ultimately paying that tax when your products come to America, even if you get rid of a tariff. That's why you understand this gets very complicated. It gets very complicated here. Here's more of Navarro on CNBC today, cut number two.
And they
just
blow us off.
I think the thing we're all trying to understand is then if there are going to be negotiations and you're saying zero is not enough, what is enough?
Zero is a small first start. Okay.
Okay.
What is enough?
But then what is enough? And let me ask you, but related to that.
But let me answer that question. Let me answer. Let's take them one at a time. We got plenty of time. So what is enough? Okay. You take any given country, they're like fingerprints. They all cheat us in a different way. So here are the things they cheat us on. Some of them engage in currency manipulation. Some of them have a hefty VAT tax. All of them dump into our markets. All of them engage in heavy export subsidies and government subsidies. All of them put up these phony technical and phytosanitary barriers to our ag products and our autos and everything in between. Many of them steal our intellectual property. A lot of them run sweatshop labor, including forced child labor. They have pollution havens. So when you say to me, Ed, what do we want from them? We want fairness. We don't want them to kill American workers by inundate us with this non-tariff cheating. And it would be really refreshing to have the media talk more about that. This zero tariff thing, it's a misdirection. It's the non-tariff
barriers. What that suggests is that there's going to be a lot bigger challenge in terms of actually then getting to yes, if you will, or finding the off-ramp where a deal is made, given that we're not just talking about getting to zero. We're talking about getting all sorts of other policies inside each of these countries changed. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm sharing that because it's important to understand what they're looking for here. It's not simply just a matter of saying we're going to have zero for zero. So, like, for example, the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen talked about how they're ready to negotiate a zero for zero tariff deal. That's not going to be enough for the president because of the VAT tax. There's the VAT tax issue right there. But there's other trade barriers, too, in terms of the quotas that they put on certain American imports, for example. But here's cut number three, the EU ready to negotiate cut three.
We stand ready to negotiate with the United States. Indeed, we have offered zero for zero tariffs for industrial goods, as we have successfully done with many other trading partners. Because Europe is always ready for a good deal, so we keep it on the table. But we are also prepared to respond through countermeasures and defend our interests.
Now, Jamie Dimon is warning of a recession. Other people are warning of a recession as well. You've got some billionaires who backed Trump who came out today and said this has to stop before this gets out of hand here. This has to stop. We need this. You know, the good news right now is the Dow futures are up. That's some good news. Really good news to end the day with. I mean, the futures being up right now is key. And I think that it's also possible that they're seeing the strength of our economy even in the face of this, which is a good thing. But they're hoping there's going to be some deals. Yeah, Goldman Sachs is putting a recession at 45%. Well, the Secretary of the Treasury, he's downplaying the market reaction to all this and saying that there does not have to be a recession here. This is what he said to Kristen Welker on Meet the Press yesterday, cut number seven.
And in terms of the market reaction, look, we get these short-term market reactions from time to time. The market consistently, the underestimates Donald Trump. I remember that in 2016, the night President Trump won, the market crashed. Market crashed. And it turned out he was going to be the most pro-business president in over a century, maybe in the history of the country. And we went on to very high after inflation returns for the next 4 years.
Well, but this was the biggest two-day crash since the pandemic. The president on Saturday urging people, quote, to hang tough, saying it won't be easy. And I guess the big question on people's minds, Mr. Secretary, how difficult is it going to be? And how long are Americans going to have to hang tough?
Well, I reject that assumption. There doesn't have to be a recession. Who knows how the market is going to react in a day, in a week. What we are looking at is building the long-term economic fundamentals for prosperity that I think the previous administration had put us on a course toward financial calamity.
The other point, too, with regards to all of this, obviously, is that you have a situation where these guys now feel like it's, if you've got to take what Navarro's saying. So Navarro's saying all of these things have to happen in order for us to reach a deal. And you've got to, and he listed like eight things there that need to happen. That's a big, complicated negotiation. That's a longer negotiation than just simply shaking hands and going, all right, it's zero for zero. I mean, the VAT issue alone right there is enough to keep this going for months on end. So that's why it goes back to what I said earlier in terms of they really need to turn around and they have to do something positive. I think one of the biggest things they could do, and we talked about this earlier with Phil Kirpin, is extend the Trump tax cuts, make them last forever. You know, put that out there, and that would do a lot right now. That would do a lot. The other issue, too, that the president's going to have to face at some point is that if the economy winds up hurting, you're going to have Republicans, and you're already seeing this now, who are saying, questioning his legal authority to do this, saying that this is really something Congress should do, and the national authorization here should only last so long, and then Congress has to take over, or Congress has to extend it, where Congress can revoke it. And, you know, what you're going to have happen is this gets, if this keeps going and this gets closer to midterms, you'll have Republicans, because they want to save their seats, obviously, who are going to start going down that road. So I think you got to start racking up some wins here, and you got to start racking up some wins early just for the consumer confidence aspect of this, so that you don't have a situation where people turn around and say, oh, I'm going to start holding on to my money. Because that's another problem that you have with that, is that uncertainty. Not only the markets don't like uncertainty, but consumers don't like uncertainty either. And then they start holding on to their money and they don't do things like travel, for example. So when you see oil dropping, and it sounds great, you're like, oh, good, maybe we'll get cheaper gas prices. Yeah, except for the fact that that could also be a sign that they're hedging, they're betting on a recession, and they're betting that people are not going to do things like travel as much, for example, or business travel will go down, or business layoffs will happen, which will be less travel. So that's another thing you got to be very cognizant of here. And Bessent downplayed that, and he also was asked the question, you know, how long is this period of economic uncertainty going to last? Cut number eight.
But it's just in terms of the uncertainty, I think, that people are feeling and seeing. And President Trump saying he wants people to hang tough, acknowledging there's going to be what he has described as a short period of pain. Can you help provide some clarity for folks? How long will this period of uncertainty be? Are we talking about weeks? Are we talking about months? Are we talking about years?
This is an adjustment process. We saw with President Reagan when he brought down the great inflation and we got past the Carter malaise that there was some choppiness at that time, but he held the course, and we're going to hold the course. And this has been years in the building, years in the making. This unsustainable system, our trading partners have taken advantage of us. We can see that through the large surpluses. We can see this through the large budget deficit. And also, Chris, this is a national security problem, which we saw during COVID. We saw during COVID that optimal supply chains are not resilient. And what I could say is the only good outcome from COVID is it was a beta test for what would happen if our supply chains got broken. And President Trump has decided that we cannot be at risk like that for our crucial medicines, for semiconductors, for shipping. And we are going to move forward so the American people can know that they are going to have a more secure future.
And yet,
now the question is, does China want a trade war? Does China want a trade war? That's the other question here. Does China want a trade war with the United States? Because does China think they can defeat the United States in a trade war, and then countries will turn to China to do business, And their long-term play is weaken the dollar and then become the world's trading partner, bypass the United States. Is that something they want? Well, there's an interesting story about that today that I read, which I'll share with you as well. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Big story of the day brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Venere. If you've been putting off that complex dental procedure, call Dr. Mike for a second opinion. He will put your mind to ease. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 856-786-2020. 856-786-2020. Dr. Mike Venere, VenereDental.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
If China doesn't drop their threat of a 34% tariff on the United States, an additional, then we are going to impose a 50% tariff on top of the other tariffs on China. Now, if that happens, that's because China wants a trade war with the United States. That's if that occurs, that means China wants a trade war. China thinks that it can win. China thinks that its alliances with countries and countries will turn to China versus the United States, and that they are also now doing things in China like building cars. We'll know that tomorrow. We'll see how that plays out tomorrow. China's markets are down as well, by the way, in addition to the United States markets. The Shanghai Stock Exchange is down 7.3%. So we'll see how that, we'll see if that is the case tomorrow. By the way, the president Truth Social out the following just a short time ago. He said the budget plan just passed by the United States Senate has my complete and total endorsement and support. All the elements we need to secure the border, enact historic spending cuts, and make tax cuts permanent, in all caps, and much more strongly covered and represented in the bill. Thank you, Senate Majority Leader John Thune and House Speaker Mike Johnson, for their hard work and attention to detail. There is no better time than now to get this deal done. The House, the Senate, and our great administration are going to work tirelessly on creating the one big, beautiful bill, an appropriate name if Congress so likes. Everyone is going to be happy with the result. Passage will make even the subject of world trade far easier and better for the USA. The House must pass this budget resolution and quickly make America great again. And so the president just tweeted out. Now, earlier in the show, Phil Kirpin was on. Phil's an expert in all this stuff. And here's the thing. I agree absolutely. What we need to do right now is we need to have we need to get the tax cuts permanent. It has to happen. We need to do that. That will give certainty in the markets. That'll give certainty in so many different areas. That's exactly what we need. That would be fantastic if that occurs. So the Congress needs to get going with that. But here's what the president tweeted regarding China. He said, yesterday, China issued retaliatory tariffs of 34% on top of their already record-setting tariffs, non-monetary tariffs, illegal subsidization, subsidizing companies, and massive long-term currency manipulation, despite my warning that any country that retaliates against the U.S. by issuing additional tariffs above and beyond their already existing long-term tariff abuse of our nation will be immediately met with new and substantially higher tariffs over and above those initially set. Therefore, if China does not withdraw its 34% increase above their already long-term trading abuses by tomorrow, April 8th, 2025, the United States will impose additional tariffs on China of 50% effective April 9th. Additionally, all talks with China concerning their requested meetings with us will be terminated. Negotiations with other countries which have also requested meetings will begin taking place immediately. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So tomorrow is going to be a very telling day in that sense of trying to figure out what China's play here and what they're looking to do, and whether or not they think they can beat the United States in a trade war, because that would be a literal trade war. That would be a literal trade war with them, no doubt about that. The other thing I wanted to mention is some other breaking news today. It's been a busy day. Andy Ngo tweeting out on X, FBI Director Kash Patel has released to Megyn Kelly and to Congress over 1,000 pages from the writings of the Nashville trans Christian school shooter. The Metro PD of Nashville had downplayed and omitted key aspects of Audrey Hale's beliefs in its recently released report into the 2023 Covenant School shooting. A judge had previously blocked the release of the writings as well. The writings provide clear statements that Hale was an autistic, leftist, trans, violent extremist. Try saying that five times fast. Having extreme hatred for whites, America, and cisgender society. Now, Opelka, if you're listening, he used the word cisgender, not me. That's one of those words that bugs Michael Opelka for some reason. I don't know why. So here are some of the quotes from the manifesto. You remember there was the manifesto when the shooting first happened and the chief came out and said there was, and the next day they were like, I think the manifesto just has like maps and stuff. They started to downplay it. That's how we all knew that they were going to cover this up, because of the fact that this individual, this shooter, did not meet the narrative. You know, didn't go with the narrative. Wasn't a straight white MAGA guy. Here are some of the writings of Audrey Hale. I'd like to dispose my vagina. Female pronouns make me feel like I want to die. I hate being in a woman's body. Need to die. Kill all the white kids. Kill my own race. Every white person who lived and died, I hate you all. I have to kill so I can be remembered in the most horrific way possible that no one can ever forget. Her rants reflect many common views among the far left. They have been sympathetic to Hale, honoring her as a victim days after the mass killings. So that happened today as well. Been a busy freaking day, no doubt about that. But days like this, I do want to be severed. I'll explain when I get back what I mean by that, in case you're wondering. And also, there's a new nickname for Gen Z I got to get into as well. Justin, you're not. Are you technically Gen Z?
Yeah, I think Gen Z starts technically in 1997, and I'm born in 1998. So I'm at like the very beginning of Gen Z.
Yeah, but you're not annoying. So I think you're an honorary. We're going to make you an honorary something else. Honorary millennial. How's that sound?
I like it. I like it a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's a better. Millennials are better. Gen Z's just annoying, you know? DeSantis, what are you? You're Gen Z as well?
Oh no, I'm millennial.
You're millennial.
Yeah, don't lump me
in. We're gonna put you in Gen Z. We're gonna trade you and Justin. So you're Gen Z, and Justin's now a millennial. We're gonna do a swap.
I don't want to be traded.
I know nobody wants to be Gen Z. Really, it's amazing. This is an annoying demo. The trophy generation. But you're not like them, Justin. That's what I mean. So we got to get you out of Gen Z.
It's weird because, like, when you think of, like, you don't think of Gen Z starting in, like, the late 90s. And it's, like, there's almost a definite splitting point where Gen Z's, like, the Gen Z that most people think of and, like, my version of Gen Z. Like, because, you know, you've got the early part of Gen Z that, you know, grew up with some freedoms, with, like, before the internet was able to have a stranglehold on on everybody.
Right.
And like there's still like a little bit of how things used to be in the early bits of Gen Z versus like you go halfway through where Gen Z is, like early 2000s, almost mid 2000s. And it's just like all they know is just participation trophies, play on their iPad, and whatever it is they get up to, I don't even know.
See that? You see that? That's what I'm talking about right there. You are smart enough to figure that out, where most Gen Zers would wear a hoodie and hide in the corner and cry. That's why I have such respect for you. All right?
I appreciate it.
Oh, and Barrett Media wrote a piece about me. They said, this is nice. They said, Garrett Searight wrote this for Barrett Media. This is about the book interview that we did, DeSantis, with the author of that book, Amy Parnes. He writes, 1210 WPHD afternoon host Rich Zeoli is one of my favorite news talk radio hosts in the country. The Rich Zeoli show is often a balance between humor, cynicism, and sarcasm while still delivering the day's news and Zeoli's thoughts on the most pressing topics of the day. Unlike other hosts, however, he isn't afraid to dip his toe into the interview waters. He regularly schedules conversations with lawmakers, newsmakers, and fellow media members. And then it goes on, and I have to read the stuff during the break. But that's pretty cool. Thank you,
that's
Garrett.
A nice compliment.
Very nice of Garrett to write that about me. Look at that. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More to come. And hang in there, because, you know, it's not all doom and gloom out there, kids. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, we're getting ready for the game tonight. I know some people were mad at me the other day when I tweeted out, bye-bye, Duke, but it's the Terp for me. What can I tell you? It's the Terp. But I guess Houston is America's underdog team, right? Going into the game. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. Appreciate you being here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. A shocking number of people admit they would undergo the severance procedure in real life. So there's a very popular show on Apple TV called Severance. I don't know if you watch it or not. It's good. It's a little out there. I'm not going to lie. See, my wife doesn't like anything that's even remotely science fictionish. So I don't really watch it with her. Besides, I'm devouring 1923 right now. This season's been amazing. It's been great. Absolutely love it. I love the first season too. And I got to start Mobland. Our buddy Susie Cool said Mobland's great. So I got to put Mobland on the list. But the severance is based on this notion that when you basically sever your life so that you go to work and there's the work you, and then you come home and there's the home you, but the two never shall cross. So you have no memory of your day at work, and at work you have no memory of your life outside of work. So basically, instead of Monday morning, you come in, it's like, how was your weekend? Oh, it was great. I took the kids to the petting zoo and went out to dinner. And really, you walk in Monday, it's like, how was your weekend? It's, I have no idea. I don't know. And then when you're home from work, you don't remember anything that took place at work. So they actually polled people if they would like to do this in real life. And a shocking new study found that over a third of real life employees and nearly half of Gen Z would prefer to be severed. They surveyed 2,000 workers in the United Kingdom. 35% said they would literally undergo a medical procedure to sever their work memories from their personal lives. You know, the biggest problem with this, though, I think, is that in this day and age, are you ever really not working? That's the only problem. Like, let's say I did this, for example. Let's say I severed myself from my job. So my show ended and I walked back into the kitchen from the Zeoli home studio, and the kids were like, how was your day? And I was like, I have no idea. I don't know. And then you get a late night email from your boss, a text. I don't know. I guess maybe it would create boundaries if there was a severance process in real life where you had your work life and then your life. Well, they always talk about this they call it work-life balance. Got to have your work-life balance. But you notice how work is always first and then life after that. So it's work-life, not life-work balance. But 46% of 18 to 25-year-olds said they would do it. Workers age 55 and over, only one in five would want to be severed. I think it's because after 55, I mean, in that certain age range, you realize that, first of all, work is a freaking great escape from real life. You know what I mean? In some instances. I would think if you want to be that divorced from your career, that it doesn't impact your life, you probably need a new job. That's what I would think. I don't know. And see, in the show, the character undergoes a severance because he's very depressed in real life because his wife died, allegedly. That's a plot line. No spoilers. And so he just doesn't want to think about her when he's at work. So he just wants to not have those painful memories when he's at work. But I would think then going home and then you're depressed all the time and you don't even have anything to fall back on, like a fun day at the office, like a good joke that a coworker told, or a fun corporate happy hour or something. You know what I mean? So I just feel like your real life would be even more miserable. And if your job stinks and you can't even like walk in Monday and be like, ah, had a great time at this party over the weekend, a little relieve a little work pressure by talking about your life, I would think that sounds brutal too. Severing yourself, your mind, so there's only the work you and then the real life you, the external out of work you, but there's no memories of either in whatever role you're in. So when you're at work, you don't remember what happened in your real life. When you're in your real life, you don't remember what happened at work, which is stupid to say real life because it's your work is still real life. I mean, I don't know. I live in a world of perpetual prep. I'm constantly prepping, constantly scanning the news. My job is to listen and observe conversations many times from people. So it'd be hard to just sever myself from that completely. Plus, what would happen if I was in my severance mode and I got a chance to go on Fox News and I forgot that I go on Fox News? You know what I mean? Or Newsmax, which I'm doing Thursday. Shameless plug. But it's interesting, the younger people, though, would want to sever their work life from their external out-of-work life. And that probably has more to do with the fact that they're at low-level, more entry-level jobs that probably are not that much fun. Because as you move up in the ranks, I don't know, I would think you'd probably like where you are in life. Otherwise, you'd probably just get a new job, I would think. Yeah, Joe from Bucks County. My man Joe from Bucks County. Ran into Joe at Atlantic City over the weekend. See, that's what I mean. I was out of work, but I was in my personal life. It wouldn't work for me. I couldn't sever myself because, you know, Joe from Bucks walks up to me in Atlantic City. We were at this Texas beer hall. There's a cigar place next door. And he comes over and he says hello. And I wouldn't remember him if I had severed myself from my work self. He'd be like, hey, I'm Zioli Army. I'm Joe from Bucks. I'd be like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means. But there are times. So, Joe, thanks for coming up and saying hello, by the way. They were going to see Wallflowers, I think, were performing. I think it was the Wallflowers. He was going to introduce me to a bunch of other listeners, but I guess he didn't have a chance. Anyway, I always like meeting people. It's always fun. But if you severed yourself from your work life and you just didn't remember it, it would solve one of the greatest dilemmas that men face all the time, which is the how was your day question. Like my buddy and I were joking about this over the weekend because we had a guy's weekend and we were joking in the ride home that as soon as we walk in the door, first thing our wives are going to do is say, how was your day? How was your weekend? And we're going to be like, fine. And we're like, what did you guys talk about? Nothing. And we didn't, because when guys get together, they literally don't talk about anything. We don't talk about anything. I don't know what do we do? We just bust chops for the entire time, basically. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, I don't golf. I wish I did. But if I did golf, I know, and I've golfed a few times, and I know this from friends. It's like, what'd you talk about when you play golf? Nothing. Nothing. Like, there's even a famous, like a funny joke about that, where a guy was golfing with this other guy, and they're like, well, how's he doing after the death of his wife? He's like, it didn't even come up. You know, it didn't even come up in the conversation. But no, but if you severed yourself from your work life and you're just, when you were home, you had no memory of work, it would solve that problem. So wife's like, how was your day? Be like, I have no freaking idea. I have no idea. And so therefore we don't have to go down this line of questioning. I just don't know. Probably would end sleepless nights too, I would think. When you're stressed about the next day, because you don't remember what the next day is going to be like. You have no idea. And then at work, you wouldn't have to worry about coworkers coming up to you and asking you that annoying question every Monday that you usually get, which is, how was your weekend? How was my weekend? It was great. You know why? Because I wasn't here. That's why. It was fantastic. I wasn't working. So, of course, it was great. So there are some advantages to that. It's an interesting show concept, Severance. But also, what I like about it is, of course, it, you know, portrays this kind of dystopian corporate life where the company basically owns you and you just have no external presence outside of it where they own you. But we live in an incredible age right now where you can start your own thing, particularly online, social media, YouTube, and all the other things, and create your own business. It's a really exciting time. And hopefully the economy stays strong and we get the tax cuts that we need and the deregulation that we need and the stock market adjusts and everything's good. That would be great. That's what I would think. Oh, speaking of Gen Z, by the way, they have a new nickname. Gen Z, the newest nickname for them is here. They're branded as the Ghosted Generation. The Ghosted Generation. As dates, colleges, and employers keep saying no to Gen Z. Ghosted. Ghosted is when somebody just drops you. They just stop talking to you like you never existed. That happens in this industry. Like if tomorrow, if I get fired today, highly possible, could happen 7:02. But if that happens, then tomorrow, whoever comes on, it'll be like I was severed from the radio station. There'll be no mention of me. It'll just be Opelka or Mary Walter, Rooney, somebody will be in, and it'll just act like I never existed. They literally sever me from ever being on the radio station, except for 30 days. I think they have to run my spots with my voice in them. Other than that, like, where's the Oli? Who? I have no idea what you're talking about. That's a uniquely radio thing. And TV in some extent, too. I mean, they usually don't give you a farewell show because they're afraid of what you might do on the way out. Like, try to burn it all down. But they have a 7-second delay for that. So, you know, if they tried to do that, you could just dump it out, you know. But Gen Z, that generation, which everybody loves to pick on Gen Z, they're the ghosted generation. They get ghosted all the time, and it's that's the becoming their new nickname. As young adults come of age in a culture shaped by hyper-curated digital experiences, political tumult, cultural and economic instability, a new pattern has emerged. Gen Z is facing more rejections and more critical life stages than any recent generation. What happens when the entire group begins to internalize no as the default response? You know what I think the problem is that a lot of these young adults were raised to believe that they were the greatest thing in the world. This is the trophy generation coming of age, if you think about it. That's really what this is, the trophy generation coming of age. And then they turn around and they don't get everything they want. And they go, wait, what? I don't understand. Yeah, because life doesn't work that way. But I got a trophy. Well, you shouldn't have. This is always the problem that we warned about. As a Gen Xer, I know I warned about this. We warned about this with the millennials to a big degree. But there's a lot of millennials. We're kind of in the same age range. So, you know, there's that. Like, I think for the most part, anybody from born from the 1960s until Gen Z, you kind of have the same idea, right? Like, it's enough with the trophy generation and everything like this. But somewhere along the way, Gen Xers or Gen Zers became, or millennials became parents and started with the trophy nonsense crap. And there were a lot of us pushing back on this and saying, this isn't going to be good. And now their kids, the Gen Zers, are now going up and going, I don't understand. You told me I was wonderful. You told me that I was the greatest thing ever. I struck out and you went, yay! That was a beautiful swing. And you didn't give me any feedback and coaching and tell me how I could be better. I just believed that I was fantastic at everything. And what's happening? What is this real life that I'm encountering here? What is this real life? Where's my trophy? Or they get to the workplace and they think they're friggin' entitled to everything. Like, why am I not promoted already? Because you've been here a day. Okay? You've been here a freaking day. But they say from education to careers to romance, never before have young adults had this much access to prospective yeses. And in turn, never before have young adults been told no so frequently. In the dating world, Gen Zers have access to more potential partners than perhaps any other generation before them, and it's all at their fingertips. Yet at the same time, this age group is getting married years after their baby boomer grandparents did. Swiping through potential partners, going out on dates with multiple people only to get rejected and reject others at astronomically high rates. The other problem is, if you're dating nowadays, I've learned this from, actually it's funny, I had this conversation with Jimmy Fallon's producers. They're Gen Zers. They're all young women in their young early 20s, mid 20s, and they're telling me all about it. And, you know, they just swipe, you know. And like in the old days, you look at somebody and you strike up a conversation. You'd be like, hey, you know, now it's just swipe left, swipe right, whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's kind of a dehumanizing process, I think, in many ways. I don't know what it's going to be like when my kids are older. I mean, my daughters are obviously never allowed to date. Obviously, but when you have a situation where you have all of this access online, so you go, I don't like that, I don't like that, I don't like that. You might be skipping over the person who might make you the happiest individual alive. But you're like, I don't like that shirt collar. Swipe. So everything becomes like a Seinfeld episode where Jerry would focus on the little minutia he didn't like about a woman, and then, you know. But you don't even have to get to the conversation point. You just go, psh. You know what I mean? And then the other thing, too, is that they have things right now like there's a restaurant. They're offering a 20% skinny discount if customers can fit their bodies through varying spaces. How long till this place gets sued and shut down out of existence? There's a restaurant in Thailand. It's being accused of fat shaming after offering diners discounts if they can fit their bodies through spaces of varying widths, as detailed in an Instagram post with nearly 8 million views. So you want to hear the Instagram post? Here, let's take a listen to this. Here we go.
I told him oatmeal.
Is that your friend?
Yeah, I told him oatmeal.
Fishing.
Never met him in your life.
You need some butter.
This guy's trying to get through a fence.
We'll butter you up here. We'll give you nice butter.
You pay extra for that.
Oh, can you do 10? Hold on, he's doing it.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
What if he gets stuck?
He's trying to go through these various slots in a fence. If you get through... The one he's trying to go through, he'll get a 10% discount if he gets through it.
You're good for 5, she already said. She said you're good looking, 5's good.
And he got through, he got a 5% discount. He snuck through the bars of the fence. So there's a 20% discount bar, 15%, 10%, 5%, and then full price, sorry, and they all get wider. So the restaurant's getting slammed for that, saying it's fat shaming. But actually, I think that makes sense, though. If you've got a buffet, you probably should, you know, I'm just saying. You know, I'm pointing that out because, you know, they're going to look at you and they look at you seeing through. They go, whoa, this is going to be big to the bottom line. All right, coming up, a little recap of the big stories of the day, as you can imagine. Just trying to give you something to think about besides the, you know, this freaking stock market. Oh, and if you have not seen White Lotus, speaking of Thailand, season 3, in my opinion, and again, this is a controversial take. In my opinion, you could skip it. I think so. I wish I'd skipped it. Take that for what it's worth. Take that for what it's worth. I'm always here to try to save you time. I love the show 1923. It's a spinoff to Yellowstone. I'd recommend that. That's what I'd recommend for you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.